So welcome to this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Sensormatic. Thanks also to our supporting partner, Orage.
Thank you very much, Paul. I am delighted to be here.
So, Clint, always a pleasure. So, you and I are going to have a little chat about a few things risk security related. And one of the things I want to talk to you about today is you've been quite vocal within the industry about a sort of blended approach to security and how that might work, and possibly that's the best way forward. But before we get into the conversation, what does blended security actually mean to you? Because I don't think it's made it into the Oxford English yet. So give me your definition.
The whole piece around blended is being proportionate. It's not necessarily all about just hard security guards. It's about using technology where it's needed, where we can really target. It's specifically around using data. And I know a number of my peers and colleagues, you know, are really down this track as well, about using the data to obviously understand the risks that we each have, but also understand how we can use the toolbox that we each create independently to affect that. It's also about the hearts and minds piece. So it's great that we've got resources out there, guards, store detectors and whatever, but unless we really get into the hearts and minds of our stores, our colleagues who are not security focused and orientated, and really get them to understand that we're here, there, but also what's in it for them, what do they need to do to actually do that? So engagement, awareness, a part of that intelligence and technology alongside resources, is that what I mean by blended?
Yeah, and just before we sort of go on, you know, I love the hearts and minds bit. You know, you've been doing this, you know, for a few years, I think it's fair to say. What's the silver bullet? What's the bit that gets people to go, okay, I get that. I need to get involved.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm sure we'll all agree that, you know, losses, risk are definitely on the increase. You know, M&S is no exception to this, you know, but one of the things that I do a lot of is sort of engagement with the voice of the colleague. And there's always the bit about human nature and is it what's in it for me? So, you know, the bits I want them to do is report incidents. Why do you want me to report incidents, Clint? Well, I want you to report incidents so I know what risks, what losses, what are you experiencing from a store ground level piece? And therefore, I can demonstrate and deploy resources or support to actually help you. And I think that's probably been the big winner here. And the other thing that I find is that keeping it simple. You know, we've got a real brand around our security strategy now, which is really easy to articulate. I always was told, you know, if you're ever in the lift with your CEO and you've got 2 minutes to get to the top floor, how are you going to get across your messages before we get there and the doors open? And this is the adage that I've used around our whole brand around security to make it really easy. What does it mean? What does it do? And what's your part to play?
Well, it's a good job you don't work for Tesco, because I think there's only 3-4 floors at Chessington. I think that's about 7 seconds to get to the top. So you mentioned the strategy there. So what do you believe makes a good security strategy? What goes in the toolkit, do you think, Clint?
Yeah, I call it a toolbox, actually. So, you know, I'm probably going to articulate this in a journey sort of perspective here. So, you know, in days gone by, you know, I had one rusty spanner there, which was a guard, and the guard could do everything. He had his underpants over his trousers, flowing cape there. But as things have changed, you know, it's not the answer to everything. So there's no silver bullet. There's a concoction, mixture, toolbox of loads of things that we use that, you know, helps us be effective. So whether that's around understanding what the data is telling us, getting real integrity around that data, getting real-time data flow, and then putting in there, analysing what does it mean, removing the false positives piece of that. Then understanding of what we can do about day-to-day business as usual. How do we support stores, monitor stores, give them that sort of reassurance, ring of steel, security perspective. And then how can we parachute in other bits that really will make a difference. So you're all aware that I have a national team of store detectives as a great example. Yeah, they are intelligence-led deployments. It's in real time. So the great flexibility I have of that is I am able to actually parachute it down when the risk denotes itself. And that's the key thing. And then, you know, again, lots of conversations with, as I say, the voice of our colleagues. We call it our business involvement group. But being able to demonstrate that and being able to demonstrate the worth is really important. And then being able to demonstrate and talk about simple things. You know, today, as an example, we've talked to other colleagues about, you know, what's your part to play? You know, the police piece, I talk about that, you know, I know a lot of my colleagues, you know, and us as well, have seen, you know, there's some concerns about the level of support from police. However, when we actually engage them in a really, really proactive, collaborative way, we've seen some great results of that. And again, that's something that I want our stores from a local perspective to do as well. Engage your stores, you know, bring them in, ask them for, get a cup of coffee into them, you know, talk about what you're doing, talk about how they can help and how they can be part of the solution, not necessarily the blame factor.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's you know, I've heard it said many times, you know, people buy people, don't they? And you know, I think it's the personal connections. And I'm fascinated that you've got, you know, the engagement program that you've got to get the message across. But you mentioned security guards there, and once upon a time, you know, did he have his underpants on the outside of his or her trousers? Where are we with security guarding? Is it still the same? Is it evolved? Should it be evolving? What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think it should. I think it has in our business. So, you know, we've gone through a program of, you know, the guard in its old world wasn't seen as being in touch with our business. It was seen as, you know, basically, you know, the bouncer, the doorman at the door, and then only would react when something would happen. You know, we would see, you know, a level of incidents that they would deal with, but really in a reactive piece. You know, the view from our business was actually, you know, we have 21 and I think we had 34 million customers go through our doors last year, is how many times does the guard engage, tell them, you say hello, you know, demonstrate some of the products, promotions that we've got on there, you know, and smile. You know, I know it sounds a simple thing, smile, but it goes a long way. You know, one of the big things we've done is actually took all of our officers through the M&S behaviours around customer service. And when you say about evolution, I think there has to be an evolution. I don't believe it can necessarily be the sort of hardcore piece in the way it is. I think, you know, I've always been a firm believer, if you treat people like human beings, 99 times out of 100, they'll act like human beings. And I think the bit about smiling, engaging and saying hello for the genuine customer is great. And, you know, we get a lot of feedback. We have a sort of a customer survey score that we get. I'm sure most retailers have got that. But the amount of, you know, comments that we get about our officers now is amazing, you know, about how friendly, how, you know, supportive of there. But also because of that training and other training that we give them, they're able to be more confident. The security posture is increased, but it hasn't become a basically a real negative, hard, threatening posture. It's become more of a confident, intelligent, you know, posture, which supports the customer journey, but is there to deal with incidents as they arise. So yeah, I think there's a big bit around understanding your customer, being in touch with your customer, and then being able to utilize some specific training, whether that's around some of the ACT stuff, whether that's around sort of some of the conflict management stuff, but to be able to use it in a really robust way to actually disrupt, off balance, deter and delay criminals and criminal activity.
Yeah, interesting term. I like that. Off balance. I think that feels like a really good way to describe, you know, just unsettling them. I'm really fascinated about how you approach it. Do you think the guards that you have, do they feel as if they're, you know, almost part of Marks and Spencer, opposed to a guarding company that's put into work at Marks and Spencer? Would that be fair to say?
Absolutely. I don't know when the last time you popped in, Paul, but, you know, it was one thing we did alongside all of that training. We changed the uniform. We changed the uniform and we put them into an M&S branded uniform. You know, I call my guards store protection officers, specifically to take away that adage of guards. Yeah. And that label. And that's, you know, it sounds a simple thing, doesn't it? It sounds a small thing, changing the uniform, but how much that's changed the perception of that person in the store. They're now part of the team. They get involved in the huddles. You know, again, they come out there and get their commendations from the security supplier that we work with. You know, and that's all done in conjunction with the store. We had some nasty incidents where, you know, the store manager and some of our senior leaders have been out there having pictures done, you know, but the branding piece is really important. I think that's the bit that's really done the interface, the connectivity, and the in-touch piece with our stores.
So I am a Marks & Spencer shopper, and I'm not sure whether I live in such a posh part of the world that there's no security in my local Marks & Spencers here in the Shires, or whether they're focusing elsewhere, and that means I obviously don't look too much like the criminal fraternity. I don't know. But, I had noticed the branding piece which you've done with the guards, which I think, personally, I believe that elevates the perception of them as well, I have to say, just from a consumer point of view.
Now, more than ever, retailers and shopping centres need to create efficient and safe shopping destinations that can thrive in the most challenging of market conditions. Sensormatic Solutions uniquely combines insights into loss and liability, shopper insights and inventory visibility to help you power operational excellence and deliver frictionless, secure, personalised shopper experiences while driving revenue. Visit us at sensormatic.com to learn more.
So you're centralising the security. Is that what you think is the right way to go? Is that so you're controlling everything?
Yeah.
Pulling the levers?
Yeah, I have. So the reason I did, like, so, you know, we had a very, very sort of disparate, restrictive, in situ, on site sort of model for a number of things. Don't get me wrong, we had some great individuals there. The bit it doesn't do, though, it doesn't do that big picture piece. It doesn't enable you to articulate the risks, crimes, and stats that are consistently happening across the board. And also, it doesn't help when we're trying to sort of lobby, influence, you know, agencies, police, etc., the scale of the problem. Yeah, I think it's become really important to actually centralise. And we've done this with CCTV specifically. And as you know, we now have a centralised security operations centre with our security partner. Which gives us the ability to actually look at all of that data and provide the right level of support. The one thing that an in-house model tends to do is, because of risks are dynamic and they change, a restrictive in-house model has, you know, an inability to basically be able to flexibly, you know, move to those new demands. The centralized operation gives us that ability to do that. You know, through the night is something that we're looking at now, which I'm really, really looking forward to, not only around the security piece, but I think there's ever, again, and this is where if we talk about business case setting and how it sits within the business, really starting to look at the retail and the commercial opportunities about having a centralized operation, especially when you can look into all stores.
Yeah, you being able to sit, if you like, in the centre. So do you feel you've got great visibility of the estate at the whole time? Have you got the technology in place where you can sort of, you know, you feel you're in control?
Yeah, we're on a journey, Paul, if I'm honest. Is we haven't got the whole estate in there, but we're working our way to that. We've used a resource to risk sort of mentality here. We've gone after our low-hanging fruit and we're working our way down the chain. Where we have got, you know, complete end-to-end crime management, security management of that, I think is absolutely working amazingly well. Where we've obviously got stores that are sort of in the journey, sort of in a hybrid sort of operation, yeah, we've got some good bits, we've got some bits that really need to be pushed on. I think what I am really excited about is by, you know, continuing this journey, getting everything in there, I can see the ability to use our security resources in a really intelligent way. The ability to use technology, and we mentioned technology earlier, but yeah, I think some of the new technology coming down the line will definitely make an enterprise centralized operation far more slicker, especially with the use of analytics and AI, which can hopefully, you know, give some nudges and obviously identify when some key risks are happening. So, you know, and again, I think that will be key in conjunction with obviously some of the operations and the teams I've got with their experience, whether it's police, customer services or retail.
Yeah, quite the transformation over the last few years, isn't it, in terms of resources at the fingertips. Now, you've mentioned a couple of times working with the police, and I'm always fascinated to sort of understand how you approach that relationship. How do you think you create better partnerships, collaboration with the police? I know you've touched on inviting them in for a cup of tea and possibly a very fine M&S biscuit, but what else do you do?
I think the big one is to keep the personal relationships. I think it's talking. When I'm, you know, again, I did sort of kidnap some police resource into my security operations centre. So I've got some very some senior police officers in there. Again, they talk the police language, but also, you know, I think we've got, again, on the journey, we've got some great sort of collaborative relationships with certain police forces. You know, what that's enabled me to do is set up some specific operations, which I'd have never been able to do in the sort of old model that we had. Now that I can really bring it to life about what's in it for them alongside what's in it for us, we've been able to actually identify that pretty much most of our high-level criminals are their high-level criminals as well. So, yeah, that's the first bit. The second bit, I think, that is definitely an area to almost strengthen and work on. And I know there's a lot to work on. And is this interagency, you know, retail peer group sort of collaborative networking piece that will help, you know, demonstrate, articulate the size of the problem and then look at ways that we can do that. Now, you know, that isn't necessarily about just throwing the proverbial monkey onto the police's back. That's about how to sort of demonstrate how can we work together in a smarter way. And again, as I said earlier, there's no silver bullet. There's a load of different tools that we just need to work out what is the right lever to pull for the right type of result.
Yeah, interesting. And have you gone as far as sort of, if you like, you know, where you've got a criminal and some evidence, being able to put the proverbial bow on it, if you like, and then hand it over to the local force and they run with it? Have you gone to those lengths?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've probably gone one step further. So, and again, I don't like to sort of name sort of parts of my team, but we've got, you know, we've got a crime intelligence department in here. It's called the CIA. I haven't quite got the eagle on the floor yet, Paul, but I'm working on it. But yeah, one of their key bits of work is literally bringing that whole package together. And then you're basically taking it to the police, engaging the police. And we've been very fortunate. We've done some really, really exciting operations with them recently, especially on some of those key organised crime groups that impact M&S.
I'm very excited to know there's an opportunity to work, be seconded to the CIA within Marks and Spencer. I feel I might need to dust off my CV. I might be emailing that across to you later, just so I can add that to the raft. That'll sit nicely alongside Aldi, Sainsbury's home base in the days when they used to make us wear green dungarees and brown shirts, and then the CIA sounds far cooler. So all of that's super impressive in terms of, you know, what's going on and what's happening within M&S. The data and the intelligence that you've been gathering, how do you feel that's helped evolve the security model overall?
Yeah, that's, you know, the data piece is, you know, we've changed on the incident reporting. I'll start on incident reporting. The first thing we needed is we needed one version of the truth. You know, we weren't getting one version of the truth. We had sort of disparate methodologies around reporting incidents. We've done a lot of work to streamline that. One of the key bits was to digitalize incident reporting, you know, take it away from a workstation, take it away from a phone, because they were both bottlenecks, and they were also taking, you know, the colleague off the floor. And that was definitely impactful to driving that real customer enhancing journey focus that they should have. You know, digitalizing, therefore getting a real clear understanding of some of the level of incidents. Then obviously adding on to that when it becomes complex and threat and harm, adding on to that and therefore being able to provide that, getting, you know, some stock loss and integrity of that. And some of the other feeds around some of the other agencies who was doing it, almost putting it all into the cooking pot to help us. Now, as I say, you know, we review our sort of store detective deployment on a weekly basis. We do, you know, look at our other resources on a monthly and quarterly basis, but without having that one version of truth and integrity, you know, we're on a hide into nothing. And, you know, the great bit is that when we can go back and, you know, report back to the business, and I'll come back to reporting and back to the business in a minute, when we can do that with, you know, truth, you know, integrity of data, it makes a big piece. That piece about reporting to the business, now, you know, we've done a lot of stuff now. We from a branding perspective, you know, we report on a monthly basis about what's happening in the business, you know, what's happening, the level of theft, the level of violence, what actions we've taken, what operations we've been getting involved, and you know, very importantly, what ROI we're doing. So, you know, not only are we doing it, and I call it the Daily Star, I obviously change it to make it more corporate when it goes into our senior people, but yeah, we have that on a monthly basis. You know, we also have a weekly piece about what the stats are, and just to show the and demonstrate the ability of what the our, you know, centralized security operations center is. The other bit, which I, you know, is a picture says 1,000 words, as it always does. So again, being able to show some videos and things like that, is that again around that hearts and minds piece, really has been a useful tool in the arsenal. In there, e-learning, again, done a fair bit of e-learning about what is, you know, if you use this connect, and we call it a connected security strategy, if you use the connected security strategy, this is how it can work, and just showing what the sort of roadmap is about how all the tools intertwine with each other and help and support our colleagues.
Yeah, and so, I mean, really, you know, bringing that all together, you know, finally, how do you see, you know, all of this technology enabling a further evolution of the strategy? You know, where's your vision for where this ends up?
Yeah. Someone said to me a little while ago, and it resonated with me, is, you know, I have a security operations center. Should it not be a retail operations center? And what I mean by that is the security piece is very, very important. But, you know, when you put on top of it the retail opportunities as well, you know, for conversion, you know, using CCTV on that, using some of these smart analytics about the customer journey, you know, almost the security pieces are basically bolt-ons, which if I get my business casing right by piggybacking onto the back of these business cases, you almost get the security opportunities for free because the retail commercial opportunities usually are far greater. So I think there is definitely sort of a, you know, a migration into, you know, becoming more commercially focused while also driving your own agenda and, you know, in piggyback in tandem to this. So yeah, technology, I think the bit around, you know, having, yeah, I own all of the security spec for M&S, all the where the cameras go, but is it a security spec or should it be a retail spec? You know, should it be dealing with, if it's dealing with footfall and if it's dealing with queue management, is that dealing with crowds? Is it dealing with, you know, criminals coming in and leaving our stores? I think the answer is yes. You know, and again, that's where I'm hoping to sort of move our piece in there. The other piece is that, you know, we've got, you know, a fairly big estate, as you know. You know, there's no way that you could have, you know, a 650 manpower resource in a socket be the size of Wembley Stadium, wouldn't it? So, again, you've got to use, you know, intelligence to provide the right level of nudges to support. We can't, you know, you're definitely not going to have those sort of numbers, but what is the sweet spot? And that's probably the other bit for me. What is the sweet spot of resources? I think, you know, we've gone down an interesting journey. We've, you know, we took a lot of resource out. We've stabilized over the last years, but it is, again, really now in the places to say, you know, how do we move those levers up there and get the sweet spot at all times?
Yeah, and I guess that's, you know, is that the sort of the question that the business is asking when you have to justify spend? You know, how close to the sweet spot are you? And I guess if you can do some interdepartmental cross charging on those cameras and installs because other people are getting benefit, then that helps bring the sweet spot closer, maybe.
It does indeed.
Clint, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us here on Retail Risk London Live. Always an absolute pleasure to talk to you. So thank you very much indeed.
Brilliant. Thanks ever so much, Paul.